What's up? This is Movies On Up. Who will win? The winner is you guys, our listeners, as always. Maybe a close second to that is my co-host, Mr. Dave Bissell, seated directly across from me.
Always a winner.
Always a winner in my heart. That's Mr. Dave. I am Ryan. We are Movies On Up. Who will win is our tagline for this week. If you think you know what movie that comes from, and I'll give you a big fat hint, we're about to talk about it in about 5 minutes. If you think you know what movie that comes from, or if you figure it out when we get 5 minutes ahead, send your guess to us in one of the following ways. You can email us, moviesonup@gmail.com. You can leave it on our Facebook page, which can be found at facebook.com/moviesonup, or tweet your answer at us on the Twitter, @moviesonup. If you are correct, and if we choose you, we will send you a super prize package full of all sorts of wonderful goodies for your utility belt. Those are a couple hints, too, as we are wont to do. This week, I kind of feel like, and it's not really our fault, these movies happen to be the biggest movies of the year, just about on any given year. If you've been living under a rock, there is a Marvel movie that comes out this weekend. It is Guardians of the Galaxy. We, I guess, tend to do a lot of Marvel movie-centric episodes. This is no different. We're going to delve into Guardians of the Galaxy, the first one, of course. Was that your favorite movie from Phase 2?
Probably. I like it a lot, but I don't remember.
Winter Soldier was in there? Did you like
Winter Soldier? Oh, I like Winter Soldier more.
Okay.
It's my second or third favorite Marvel movie. Probably third now because of Civil War.
Yeah. A movie that Dave and I both like an awful lot. A movie that I think a lot of people obviously liked, maybe a little bit more than they thought they were going into it. It had a very, very strong opening weekend. It opened August 1st, 2014 to $94 million. Which was just about $76 million ahead of fellow MCU-er Scarlett Johansson with Lucy. That was in the second week for that movie. That was in second place. Get on up, Hercules and Dawn of the Planet of the Apes round out your top five.
Another Marvel movie
that week.
Get on up, Black Panther.
Yeah, I guess that's true. When you said Marvel movie, I was like,
who
wasn't a Marvel character
yet. He wasn't at the time.
Yeah. Inevitably, when they draw The Rock into something, when his Black Adam thing falls through, he'll be something. You look at the star power that there was in that particular week. You know, you had Scarlett Johansson, who's, I think, now the highest grossing female actress going, at least currently.
She has the Marvel
Yeah, which certainly helps. It goes a long way. And then you have The Rock, who's headlining the Fast and the Furious movies, which just broke the
worldwide opening record.
Absolutely insane. But they were both beat at the box office, not in Marvel franchises or Fast and the Furious franchises, in fairness, but they were both beat by the likes of Chris Pratt, Bradley Cooper, Zoe Saldana, and Dave Bautista, directed by a guy who was, at this point, was probably a little bit of a stranger to giant box office numbers, and that was James Gunn. This movie went on to gross $333 million domestically, which puts it in the top 50 all-time on the domestic list at number 47, one spot above the worst superhero movie of last year.
BVS.
Batman versus Superman. That is correct. I think we talked about it during our Batman versus Superman episode, how you have the two heaviest hitters from DC not manage to make more money than what is
D-tier characters.
Exactly.
With no star power.
At that point, absolutely. I mean, maybe the biggest, Bradley Cooper.
The biggest stars are voices.
Right. Doesn't appear on camera. And maybe the other biggest star in the movie is a former wrestler, not named The Rock or John Cena.
Yeah. Pratt wasn't a movie star at the point.
No.
He had the Lego movie that year, which was a nice.
Sure.
Zoe Saldana, she's headlined
Star
the movie.
Trek?
She's been around, but she wasn't bringing to the, like, she didn't have a bunch of box office, like, she carried them under. Lee Pace, Batista, I mean, like I said, your two biggest names in the cast.
Well, and Vin Diesel too. We kind of did. I didn't mention him, but again, he's another one that, you know, just is voice only and four words basically in that movie. Just to finish out the box office numbers on this, one spot below the 2010 Tim Burton helmed fairy tale reboot of
Alice
in Wonderland. That's correct. So that's where it is, slightly better than Batman. Not quite as good as Alice in Wonderland, but $333 million.
That does say a lot about the DCU, where they're at.
It says more about the DCU than it does the MCU.
Because, I mean, this is the one that people were like, oh, this is maybe where Marvel falters. because they didn't know these characters.
Mm-hmm. A casual fan knows who Captain America is. Iron Man may have been the biggest stretch, perhaps.
He was a lower tier character when Iron Man came out, mm-hmm. but you had the Robert Downey Jr. star power, which at the time he wasn't a star, but people knew who he was.
Yes.
I mean, he wasn't a bankable star, but people knew who he was.
If you can't name the character, if you were to see Captain America, you know, all right, that's the comic book guy or whatever.
Peter Quill's not recognized. Like Gamora, Drax. No. I mean, now they are, but...
Yeah, I think it was based solely because of this movie, but you hit the nail on the head, and that's kind of where I want to start, is going into this movie, maybe going into the original Iron Man, you weren't exactly sure, well, can this be a Spider-Man? Can it be a Batman? Can it be something that can sustain a franchise, let alone sustain an entire, what would become a cinematic universe? But Guardians, okay, nobody knows these characters. Is this going to be where Marvel finally has a movie that flops, or at least doesn't surpass all expectations? Is the MCU getting too big? Have they now
running out of ideas?
Yes. Have they specifically reached a level of characters that people just aren't going to care about? Yeah, Batman appeals to a lot of people. Superman does. Wolverine, Spider-Man, Captain America. These guys are above the title A-list.
Even as you go down, like Black Panther hadn't been done yet.
Yeah.
Doctor Strange and Captain Marvel, I think, are even, they're lower tier, but I think they were more recognizable than Guardians of the Galaxy.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
At that point, are we just digging too deep into the source material to find...
Like, is a Squirrel Girl movie next?
Yeah. At what level are you
Which
going...
I'd be all for.
If it's Anna Kendrick. At what point are you basically scraping the bottom of the barrel with characters people are going to care about? Is this where it is? Have we run out of A-list and now we're just left with the rest? Another giant question is, all right, well, Robert Downey Jr., former bankable star, we get that. I think of all the casting... Chris Evans had headline movies
before.
He'd been
around. Yeah. Hemsworth was the biggest gamble.
Hemsworth had been in a couple, Cabin in the Woods with Joss. He did that movie. But at least for my money, you could kind of see it with those other guys. Like, they looked like they were sort of handsome leading men types. But when Chris Pratt was cast.
He was doughy.
He was doughy, goofy, you know, best known for Andy Dwyer on Parks and Rec. Is this going to be a lead in a superhero movie?
Well, and that's the thing is I wanted to touch on is the casting process for Star-Lord was massive. It was our first summer of doing the podcast when we focused on a lot of news. It seemed like we had a handful of names every week for people that were going for Star-Lord and that were being considered, and then all of a sudden...
And not one of them ever was Chris
Pratt. None of them. Joey Gordon-Levitt got far in the process till he backed out to do Sin City 2. Eddie Redmayne auditioned, Aaron Paul, Cam Gigande, Chris Lowell, don't even know who that is, Garrett Hedlund, terrible, John Krasinski, who was in the running for Captain America, went for this, Lee Pace, who ended up being Ronan, fake Tom Hardy auditioned, Glenn Howerton went far, like he was at a point like the front runner.
I guess that would have been perhaps... on the level of a Chris Pratt, best known for a TV role.
Yeah. So, I mean, he was at one point like considered the front runner. Jack Huston, Joel Edgerton, Jim Sturgis, Wes Bentley, Cyclops, James Marsden.
I guess that would have been the age appropriate one. I thought Ty Sheridan?
Ty Sheridan.
Yeah. A little young.
Michael Rosenbaum and Jensen Ackles. I got 17 names there, and it's like some of those I could see Aaron Paul being a quality Star-Lord. But I mean, Chris Pratt took like...
Yeah, I mean, now it's hard to see anybody else doing that, although, in fairness, I think Marsden can do about anything, so I would have been totally okay with that, and I think he would have done a great job. A lot of these guys would have. Eddie Redmayne's a fantastic actor. I mean, he could
Oscar
have figured
winner,
it out. Yeah. But there was so much uncertainty with this movie about the characters, the casting, and when you add to that, and Marvel's had a penchant for making directors, getting guys that I would say maybe outside of Joss, who had this giant resume, this giant genre resume, been able to select guys and then make them above. I mean, Joe Johnson with The Rocketeer, like he had made some great movies.
Joe Johnson's been around.
Yes.
He's had a career.
Specifically, maybe like the Russos or taking James Gunn, who was a guy that was probably more known for being a writer than a director. His feature directing was Slither and Super leading
up
to this.
He had more success, like mainstream success, as a writer. Like people like me and you knew him from his Trauma days.
Yeah.
He was married to Jenna Fischer for a long time. I love Slither. I think it's one of the most underrated horror movies of the last 20 years. Super was ambitious as hell. Like, mm-hmm. He took Rainn Wilson from The Office and made this gritty, violent movie that didn't care about tone. Like, that movie, is it a comedy or is it it's a mental
it's
like,
a hella dark comedy.
It's all over the place. So,
but
I mean,
in case you haven't seen Super, you could make the argument it is a superhero
movie.
Oh, it's
absolutely a superhero
right.
movie.
So you have a guy that's made
Kevin
this.
Kevin Bacon's a fantastic supervillain.
Oh,
right?
He's fantastic.
He's so good in that movie.
I mean, and he was good in First Class, but his supervillain is better.
And this is better,
yeah. But you know, you have a guy that's made a superhero movie, but it was so dark.
It wasn't a Marvel movie.
Right, it wasn't. Yeah. And even with Slither, another one of his movies, it was a great movie for Dave and I, but I'm not sure that it was commercial. And these movies are almost the dictionary definition of commercial. So
you want to talk about commercial, Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
Scooby-Doo 2, those are movies he wrote. Mm-hmm. The Dawn of the Dead remake, directed by Snyder, that was a commercial success. That was big. So that's where his success came from. Like, people like me and you that know what Romeo and Juliet is, like, yeah. We were excited to see James Gunn in this role because it was new, but
if
for
no
the
other
average
reason,
people, like, they didn't know.
Right, yeah, and maybe the average person doesn't know or care about any of the directors that come on board. I mean, when Shane Black is doing Iron Man 3, I'm like, okay, this is great. You mean I'm going to see a Marvel movie directed by the guy that just did Super? Yeah, I want to see where that goes and how that turns out, more of a curiosity than anything.
Just like Thor Ragnarok, perfect example.
Yes, I want to see Takiya. I want to see the guy that did Hunt for the Wilder People direct an MCU movie. I want to see what he does, seeing the Thor and Daryl stuff. I want to see how much of that tone gets incorporated into Thor. So many unknowns, I guess, are kind of swirling around in this movie, and I'd like to kind of address all of them because really every one of the questions was answered with a resounding, they got that right. And if you start with the star, this is the genesis of Chris Pratt as a leading man. And it's 2014. So just, you know, 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago, we're wondering if this guy can lead a movie. Since then, last year, Magnificent Seven, which he was one of the leads.
That was a Denzel movie.
Right.
But Chris Pratt was second lead in a Denzel movie, which...
Yeah. Passengers.
That was a Chris Pratt movie.
Yes.
Like, J-Law was in it.
Yes.
But that was a Pratt movie.
His movie. And those were probably the least two successful of the other ones I'm going to mention. You go the year before that, Jurassic World, ginormous success. I don't think anyone would have predicted the level of success that that movie had. And then the year before that, in 2014, when he had, you mentioned, Lego and Guardians. With those...
Lego, it's kind of whatever, because... Not discrediting it, but to lead an animated movie is a completely different skill set than to lead an action blockbuster.
In fairness, the Lego movie and that character, Emmett, did seem very much like Andy. So that's not a stretch. Like, after having seen that,
but then to go from Andy Dwyer to badass superhero.
Yeah. Right.
Or badass raptor trainer.
Yeah. Or just badass cowboy guy, I guess. But we were questioning whether or not Chris Pratt would be able to have the star power to lead a movie. In those 2.5 years, 5 movies, over $1.3 billion at the box office. It's an average of $269 million a movie. That's including Magnificent Seven, which I think made $94 million, and Passengers, which was kind of a bomb. Despite the two leads, it made just north, I think, of 100. And those are, like, his misses. There's no way we could have known that Chris Pratt would be that kind of a star in 2014, but he answered the bell here, and it wasn't a fluke.
And, I mean, that number's going to go up because you're following it with Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, Avengers Infinity War next year, Jurassic Park sequel next year, then it'll be Guardians sequel. Like, I don't know how much... time he's going to have to do anything
other than
Marvel, because he's now got Guardians 3 and whatever's after Infinity War.
And that's
sort
of it.
And then Jurassic World, I doubt, ends at 2.
Because he's now going forward in the MCU, where Guardians had existed on its own. He was able to make that movie and then go do Jurassic World, Magnificent Seven, Passengers. He was able to take other projects, but now once it gets folded into the larger team-up movies, you kind of have to be there for those as well. But I would say $269 million as your average, that's a good number to walk into a meeting if you're trying to get a part. Slide that across the table, and I think you're fine. And we had kind of mentioned Gunn making movies that I would say it's fair to say they're not for everyone, especially on the wide-release directorial stuff. I mean, yeah, you're right. Scooby-Doo was, that's the kind of, I guess, audience that you're looking for. Certainly a lot more people than like Scooby-Doo. But to take that director, it was kind of risky. I mean, his tone for Super, his tone for the trauma stuff, that's not broad range, like kid friendly stuff. So it's almost like handing a live mic to like a crazy person and seeing what they're going to do. So I was certainly curious as to how that was going to work. And obviously it worked well. It came out this week that he's already signed on to direct Guardians 3. And if that happens, he's going to be the first guy in Marvel history to do all three movies in a particular franchise, which for James Gunn to be that guy,
yeah.
I would not have guessed that.
Because, I mean, the Russos did Captain America 2 and 3 and then graduated to Avengers 3 and 4.
So, I mean, they'll have done more movies.
Yeah, Favreau did 1 and 2, and then he was out.
Shane Black did 3. Yeah.
Thor has had a different director for each one. Mm-hmm. And I think that says a lot. They took a gamble. They took a gamble doing Guardians first place. But to make it work, you have to make it different. It has to be unique. So obviously Gunn had this vision that they liked and they ran with it and they gave him the freedom because he's not just directing them. He wrote the script for 1 and 2. He's going to write 3. He's not some hired gun just come in to direct these.
No pun intended.
Yeah. Oh yeah. he's not just coming in to direct these scripts that are already great. Like, he's putting the story together. They have essentially given him the Guardians of the Galaxy.
He's kind of like a mini Joss, you know? Like, he's
in that Guardians of the Galaxy. So, I mean, if they wanted to do anything and they want to spin off Nova, you have to introduce Nova and then spin them off. They want to spin off Nebula. Like, anything like that has to go through him. So, for that aspect of it, and they're all going to merge. Like, right now you have the world stuff. You have the New York stuff, which is on Netflix. Gunn introduced the cosmic stuff. Doctor Strange got into a little bit of the mystic stuff, but they're all going to be mixed here pretty soon. Like, Thor Ragnarok is going to do a good job of expanding that cosmic stuff, but to just take this guy who had Slither and Super and just give him a franchise in the biggest cinematic universe we've ever seen ever is massive.
On the one hand, they mitigated their risk. They didn't give him Captain America. They gave him one that I think even
if it fails,
it's not the end of the world. And I would be willing to bet that even in their wildest expectations, Marvel didn't imagine that this movie would make $330 million. I think they would have been happy with maybe 150.
Yeah.
Okay. So to take a chance on that, I mean, we're talking about $120 million, which is a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yes, they gave him a franchise, which he took and ran with and made it to the point where, like, oh, that's legit. That's on the same level as any of these other superhero franchises. And a lot of that is because of Gunn.
I think he also symbolizes that Marvel's taking a different approach to directors than they did when they first started. Because they got Favreau on the cheap, kind of, because, you know, he'd had Zathura, he'd had some directorial hits, but no, like, massive. And then after 2, they didn't want to pay him what he deserved after doing 1 and 2. Thor, that's been a mess with directors, like, after the first one. I think they used to have the mindset that we'll just churn them out. Like, we have the people that can write the scripts, we can have anybody direct them. And that's kind of what it felt like they were doing there for a bit, until the Russos come along, and it's like, okay, you hit that out of the park. Let's have you do as much as possible. James Gunn hit it out of the park. Let's have you do it all. They're having Peyton Reed back for Ant-Man 2. Like, and that's why I'm excited what Waititi does after Thor Ragnarok, because are we going to get a Thor 4? I doubt it.
Right.
But are we going to see more of him in the Marvel Universe? I hope so. And I would love to see that transition into him doing something else. Maybe give him his own Edge of the World where he can do what Gunn did with the Guardians.
Maybe he could do a Hulk movie.
If they ever do
it. Right. I mean, yeah. If they ever do another one. Yeah. Or just the Thor and Daryl Netflix series would be fine with me as well. So we had two giant unknowns in the star and the director, which is maybe not great for a movie, especially like a tentpole movie. But then when you add into that characters based off source material, characters that, for the most part, we have been familiar with the other ones, but these ones are unknown. And like you said, this is maybe a C-tier team.
I think that's even giving it more credit than
probably, but let's stick with that. So I think Marvel probably would have been happy if this would have made C-tier money. At that point, who knows what that is? Maybe it's 120. Let's go with that. At that point, there was no real comparison. This was going from maybe a minus listers that led their own movies to certainly a C. I think the closest comparison would be in 2015 when Ant-Man came out, because that's a character that, yes, Ant-Man was an Avenger, was part of the team, but that's a character that I don't think people knew. He was off by himself. It was an origin story for Ant-Man, much in the same way it was an origin story for the Guardians. And that movie, it was respectable. It made $180 million. Guardians nearly doubled that. With the exception of Iron Man 3, the only other movies in the MCU to make more than Guardians of the Galaxy were basically your Avengers movies. The first Avengers, Age of Ultron, and Civil War, which I know is technically a Captain America movie, but it has all, I mean, they're giant team-up movies. So if you like Spider-Man, for instance, oh, you're excited to see Civil War because this is his first appearance in the MCU. Or you're a big Captain America fan, or you happen to like Thor or the Hulk or whatever it is. These are all superheroes that we've all known basically our entire lives. Whether you read them or not, you know them, you're familiar with their stories. So it makes sense that those are going to make money. But for Guardians to beat every Captain America movie, not including Civil War, to beat both the Thors, more so than Doctor Strange, which I don't think is a huge, I mean, maybe not a huge surprise, but Iron Man 3, the only standalone movie that made more money in the MCU, with that cast, that director, that roster, I think speaks to what a ridiculously well-made movie this ended up being.
Yeah, and the timing of it, because this was the first one after Winter Soldier, correct?
I believe so, yeah.
So they just destroyed S.H.I.E.L.D. And, you know, Winter Soldier was a massive hit at the time, just whereas Ant-Man was the first one post Avengers 2. So, I mean, it's easy to compare Guardians and Ant-Man, and when you do, Guardians came out the winner.
Yes.
Big time.
Absolutely. Like I said, I mean, from a box office standpoint, it nearly doubled what it made domestically, and $180 million is a lot of money. So I think it's safe to say that the movie was successful and it surpassed anyone's wildest expectations. But I think the more interesting question, and I think the more difficult to answer question, we know why there may have been question marks, but why or how did it end up being that big of a success? And I would start with these other movies, and by these other ones, I mean, you know, your Captain America, your Iron Man, even your Avengers. These were comic book movies, particular genre that they fit into. Well, they're action too, so whatever, action superhero movies. And maybe that's your thing, maybe it's not. Maybe you're not into capes. But Guardians was more, yes, it was a superhero movie.
It was a sci-fi movie.
Yep.
It was a space epic.
Mm-hmm.
Was a, I mean, obviously, action adventure movie.
Right. Everything the other ones were, and it added that space element, which I think does draw in an entirely separate group of people. If you go see a Batman movie, you may be afraid you don't know the villain or you don't know some of these characters, you don't know the story. But for Guardians, I think they wrote it and planned it to where this was going to be your first experience with everyone. And they did a great job of not leaving anybody behind and bringing out people that, oh, you don't like comic book movies? Fine. This isn't. This is just like a space epic.
And I think where it succeeds is right in that first 10 minutes. And somebody like Gunn is the one that can pull it off. Because if you watch Super, like we talked about the tone, like at times it's this hilarious comedy. Other times it's just this brutal, sad action movie. And other times it's a picture of mental illness. Like it's all over the place tone-wise. Slither, not as much, but at times it's a straight-up horror movie. At times it's this wacky B-movie. What you get with Guardians is opens with one of the most emotional scenes in a Marvel movie to date. Those first few minutes of Guardians with Quill's mother passing away, like, is brutal. People are already in this movie not knowing what they're going to get, and they're kicked in the nuts right away. And then you transition from that to the soundtrack, to him picking up the alien and singing into it, like kicking stuff. To go from that like gut-wrenching emotional to that fun in that amount of time, like people didn't know what they were getting. And in within those first 10 minutes, they're in it because they still don't know what they're getting.
Exactly. You're not sure the tone of this movie. You've got two vastly different ones. You don't know really what you're going to get through the rest of it. I mean, obviously, it ended up being a lot more of the second tone, but they did a fantastic job of introducing you to this character. You know a tiny bit of his backstory. He was born on Earth. He got abducted by aliens, presumably lived with them for 20-some years, and now he's kind of on his own. But they did a great job of setting up Star-Lord. They did a fantastic job of setting up one of the characters nobody ever talks about, and that's the tape. The cassette player, the mix that his mom made was such an important part of the movie, not just from a soundtrack standpoint, but even from a narrative when he goes back into the prison to get it. You know instantly why that's so important to him. And when Drax calls him an imbecile for going back and getting it, you know why he did it and you don't really blame him. So everybody, I think, got set up so wonderfully in this movie. It's hard to do an origin story for, you know,
five people,
yeah,
plus a villain, which Ronan suffered in this movie.
It was an awful, he was a perfect example of how bad Marvel villains for the most part have been.
Because I mean, he had potential, but wasn't much there. Nebula, I thought, was used the right amount to where I feel like she was given just enough to be like, oh, she was a cool side villain,
right?
But not overused to where it's like, oh, she was an underused main villain. So we'll see her more in the second one, which I'm excited about, because I thought she was great. I thought she was awesome. John C. Reilly's character, Glenn Close, Peter Serafinowicz even. Those are good actors in these, like, way down the line roles. Benicio Del Toro is the collector. These are all people that have headlined movies.
Right.
They're 10th or 12th on the call list. That's where Marvel is doing awesome, is your people in your smallest parts aren't just some dude happy to book his first gig. It's somebody who's won awards or has been award quality in the past or headlined movies showing up just to do this. I mean, Jaiman Hansu. I mean, that dude has added a fantastic career. Oscar nominee, and he's basically henchman A. He's a glorified henchman. And I mean, not to mention Josh Brolin making his Thanos debut. The cast all around, your main core wasn't the most bankable Hollywood team-up. But you surround that with this awesome supporting cast, and everything works. This non-bankable team proves that they deserve to be there, and then you have everybody else pulling their weight, and it's all around. It was just very, very well done.
You kind of mentioned the tones flipping back and forth. You have the super serious tone, then you have, for lack of a better word, the really light tone that the rest of the movie kind of had. And that's something that I think all the Marvel movies, and you really tell when you go to like a DC movie and it's just a lot of frowning and over-accentuated posing. But what Marvel does have going for it is the movies typically are a lot of fun. And this one, I think, specifically was really funny. I mean, this one,
I mean, they put a
plays more like a comedy.
They put a cum joke in a Disney movie. The Jackson Pollock joke comes out of nowhere, and it's so beautifully placed and written that it's amazing, but
which is almost unique to James Gunn. Like if there was somebody that was going to be able to do that, it would be him.
Yeah.
Pratt's a great guy to deliver that line, but it's not just like,
I just can't think. There's a blooper from Parks and Rec. It's Rashida Jones and Amy Poehler. It's one of my favorite videos on the internet. And they're like, oh, we're thinking of comebacks. Like, who has made a good comeback? And somebody says somebody that's made a comeback. And he goes, Kim Kardashian. And they're like, okay, well, not quite what we were talking about. And he goes, no, I'm pretty sure she got cum on her back in that video. And it's like during a take, and everybody just loses it. And it just, I can't help but think of that when he delivers that Jackson Pollock joke, just because it's so smooth and his delivery is so
matter of fact,
like ridiculous.
But he's not the only one that has lines in the movie that get laughs. I mean, Rocket has a ton.
Drax.
Yeah, you know, a character and specifically an actor that you may not instantly think of when you think of comedic chops, but the way he was able to deliver those lines and how he refers to the rest of the team, great writing and great delivery by a guy who, you know, to this point doesn't have a ton of actual acting experience. This is probably, I would say, his biggest role.
Yeah, and he wasn't, Momoa was offered the part but backed out. Isaiah Mustafa was almost cast as Drax before they went with Bautista, so it's not like he was the first
right.
one they
this
thought
part wasn't
of.
Written for.
And but I mean, he's rumored to have a big part in Infinity War. So it's not like they got this wrestler and just want him to
be a big dude.
I'll compare him to, I like Gina Carano, but I'll compare him to her in Deadpool.
Hey, okay.
Yeah. Where she didn't have to do much.
Right.
She's an MMA fighter. She has a couple fight scenes. Other than that, she's background player. So it's not like Drax is just there to show up, be big, and punch people.
Look menacing. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, they gave him stuff to do, and it worked. And by judging by the teasers that we've seen from the second one, he has a lot more jokes even.
More of that. Which maybe specifically with this movie, each of the parts, I guess, were great. But they also did have great chemistry together, and that's something that you didn't get a chance to maybe play a little bit with Cap and Black Widow before you put them into a larger scenario. Like, this is a team-up movie from the start, and the group has to work together. And I thought they did a great job of going from, in 2 hours, we just met the guy, to, at the end of it, like, I'm happy to die among friends.
Yeah, and I think that is a big testament to Marvel's casting, because they've hit it out of the park with everything. Look at the chemistry between Evans and Sebastian Stan. They look like long-lost best friends. The Scarlet and Chris Evans and Captain America 2, even Evangeline Lilly and Paul Rudd, and even Michael Douglas and Paul Rudd. Chemistry drives the Marvel
Anthony
movie.
Mackie and everyone.
Yeah. I mean, just look at every Marvel movie. Like, the chemistry is fantastic. Whereas, not to keep harping on it, but like any scene with Henry Cavill in it, there's no chemistry anywhere. Affleck and Gal Gadot seemed awkward together. Whereas Marvel, you put their characters, and that's the best thing about the Marvel movies, are the fight scenes use all the powers together. Whereas that last fight scene in BVS, it was just Batman doing some stuff, Superman doing some stuff, and Wonder Woman doing some stuff. Whereas the Marvel movies, the airport scene in Civil War is the ultimate Marvel scene, because you have Ant-Man on the arrow. They're all working together.
It's almost like they work together so well. There are characters that are supposed to go together. Captain America and Bucky are supposed to go well together. But I would totally watch a movie with Ant-Man and Hawkeye.
Hawkeye, yeah.
Take two random, put them in a hat, pull two names out, and I would love to, because those actors do have such great chemistry together, I would love to see Chris Pratt and Black Widow. Like, let's do Peter Quill and the Black Widow.
I think the only, like, lacking chemistry, and it might hurt them later, depending on how far they want to go, is Elizabeth Olsen and Paul Bettany.
Yeah.
The Scarlet Witch Vision, there's no chemistry. And
which,
I mean,
is unfortunate if you want to progress down
exactly.
that story.
That's
line.
Why I don't know where they want to go with that. Yeah. But, I mean, a lot of that is because of how good Paul Bettany is and how blank he is. I trust him as an actor that if they do want to go that route, maybe he does get there, but he's playing it so straight and so forward that it would be hard to have chemistry with him. But like Don Cheadle, and I mean, he came into the second movie and the chemistry with him and Robert Downey Jr. is phenomenal.
Yeah.
So anytime you have a team up movie, that's going to be crucial. And they got it.
I mean, they got it right on the first
try. Even Cooper, who's not there physically, fits. The dialogue, I have part of a plan. That whole scene, or I'm so mad I'm kicking grass. He's not there physically, but he fits with everybody
else. Scenes are great. I mean, that one, the scene in the bar where, you know, he's talking about his creation, his origin story is, again, it kind of shifts tone a little bit. It's back to a little bit heavier, but that stuff was all done wonderfully. They did a great job with the heroes. And we mentioned, you know, Lee Pace, through no real fault of his own,
I thought he did great with what he had.
Right, yeah.
He didn't have much.
He didn't have much, and Ronan was a character that I don't think his motivation was kind of just stated, like, my people are at war, you've killed my dad, prepare to die. He's a little Inigo Montoya with that, I guess. But, and you mentioned Nebula being like a great B-villain. This was the movie that really kind of put Thanos into the MCU. It's not his first appearance in it, but it is Josh Brolin's
first appearance
as Thanos, and where he actually plays, I would say, an integral role in the story. He's set in motion basically the events of this movie, trying to get a hold of the orb. And I think for Marvel to take a character that's going to be so important moving forward, introducing that character in this movie, character that is going to be your heavy, your big bad,
everything is building up to him.
Yes. And he shows up in a movie that maybe a lot of people don't see. Or at least that was the thought. And I mean, I guess it had to be Guardians. To this point, the MCU
wouldn't make sense anywhere else.
No, it was kind of confined to Earth. With the exception of Asgard, you know, everything else had been on Earth. So if you want to bring in Thanos, which they were going to, if you want to down the line bring in somebody like Galactus, at some point you have to expand the borders of your universe. And I think that this movie did a fantastic job of doing that. Space is a thing. There are other planets. There are other cultures, other civilizations. Not only did they build worlds, but they built the Kree. They built the Nova Corps. They built all of that stuff, as well as introduce an entirely separate team.
It was great, but I think it leads to the discussion of how would Marvel fail? At this point, what does Marvel have to do to fail? Because Batman vs. Superman, that was a failure, but it still made $330 some million.
Yes.
So you figure Ant-Man is probably the closest they've had to a failure, and that was still, what, $180 million? Yeah. And decently reviewed. But it's not like they haven't had misses before. Iron Man 2 was pretty panned, but still made a lot of money.
Yes.
Iron Man 3 had a lot of very polarizing.
Right.
Made more money than anything. Thor, his solo movies are kind of the forgotten bastard of Thor 2 wasn't good, wasn't reviewed well. It did okay money. So, I mean, it's not like they haven't had misses. It seems like every movie, it's like, oh, is this finally their miss? Where you got that with Guardians, $330 million. Doctor Strange, oh, people aren't going to be into that. It was a hit, like, and it was well enough. Like,
What
do they have to do to fail? Because Tom Hanks always used to say, I make 3 movies at a time. If people really like one of them, that gives me enough to make 3 more movies. So as long as 1 out of every 3 Tom Hanks movies is a success, Tom Hanks is going to stay Tom Hanks. Marvel is doing better than 1 out of 3.
Right.
Even if Guardians came out and made $110 million and was critically panned, you still got Civil War coming out.
I think
even if Guardians 2 tanks, you still have Spider-Man coming out.
Marvel has built themselves up to a point where, in order to tank it, you'd take
3 or 4 movies in a row.
Yes, you'd have to have multiple movies that were poor in a row, and I don't see a way they can do that until we don't have Chris Evans anymore, we don't have Robert Downey Jr., until you've exhausted all these first contracts, and you're basically starting over. We are, yeah.
But I think at that point, there's still a curiosity.
There is. But going forward, you know, we have Infinity War. We have the next untitled Avenger movie. You've got Black Panther.
Captain Marvel.
Spider-Man 2.
Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yeah, Ant-Man and the Wasp. Guardians 3. But then you have a couple untitled Marvel movies. And depending on what those are,
I'm sure there's going to be a Doctor Strange 2.
Probably. Inhumans is
still coming to TV.
Yeah. If we get into where your bankable or your more established characters are your Doctor Strange and your Ant-Man, then you might have a problem.
Maybe, but here's where I think is they...
But by then, they will buy the X-Men and Hugh Jackman will come back and rescue
Fantastic
everything.
Four. Yeah. The movies are fun. Even if they're not good, they have their moment. They're watchable.
Right.
They haven't put out something that's unwatchable garbage. Whereas BVS, like...
DC has yet to put out something that isn't unwatchable garbage.
Like, those
garbage.
Movies are just bad. And I realize there are people that like them. But if you're not feeling them, there's nothing else there. Whereas Marvel, I feel like even if you're not feeling it, there's good action, there's good jokes, like there's something that can get you through the rest of the movie. I don't know what they have to do to fail. It would take like 4 or 5 failures in a row because everything's planned so far out. Yeah. And it's such a well-oiled machine that they're planned right now through almost 2020. So even if they start failures, I mean, hypothetically, Guardians 2, Spider-Man, Avengers, Black Panther, if those are all misses. Like,
somehow.
Yeah. I mean, and they're not. The only thing I worry is that Black Panther is a February release in 2018. Captain Marvel is a March release. I'm worried about them getting too thin because they're going to amp up. When you had Iron Man going and Captain America and Thor and now Ant-Man and Avengers... Yeah, 3 movies a year makes sense because you're trying to get all these
right.
in. But once we're done with Captain America and we're done with Thor and we're done with Iron Man and Avengers are going to be more event spread out, do we need 3 a year? Do we need Black Panther 2 and then 2 other characters where they're really reaching for? Because like I'm a Marvel guy. I don't even know where they go next. Inhumans are going to TV. New Avenger or whatever they're calling, the ones with Squirrel Girl and all them. That's a TV show. Cloak and Dagger, that's a TV show. Punisher, introduced in Daredevil, that's a TV show.
Unless you're going to...
I can't see him ever bringing the Defenders to...
No, they're run by different arms within Marvel, and they don't get along. Unless you're going to go, like, bringing in Riri and bringing in Kamala Khan, unless you recast your Iron Man specifically that way, you recast your Captain America, which I would assume that they're going to do probably sooner than later...
I mean, I would love...
Those, I guess, could fail.
See, I would love
Anthony
Mackie Captain America movies.
Sure, but I'm just saying, like, taking out Tony Stark as your Iron Man.
Yeah.
From what I understand, people aren't reading those books nearly as much as they were before. If that's any kind of indicator, which I'm not saying it is, maybe that's where you start. And I don't even mean just gender swapping things out, but when we start recasting, when we basically... You know, all your players on
when
your
you're
team.
You're starting from scratch.
Yeah, has retired.
But everything's
and you're
so staggered now that say we don't have, you know, okay, we lose Chris Evans, Hemsworth, and RDJ. We still have Paul Rudd as Ant-Man. We now have, we still have
Chris Pratt.
We still have Brie Larson as Captain Marvel. We still have Chadwick Boseman as Black Panther. So
Tom Holland.
Yeah, Tom Holland, Benedict Cumberbatch. So, like, as that first generation expires, you have the second generation that's already established. And now we still have, I don't know, let's get another movie beyond Ant-Man and the Wasp. Let's do a Hawkeye Ant-Man movie. Let's do a Scarlet. And I think that's where a lot of it's going to go is, you know, Thor Ragnarok is a Thor Hulk buddy movie. Do we get a Black Widow Hawkeye movie? Do we get a Hawkeye Ant-Man movie? Like, that's where you're going to expend the life a little bit.
And it may not be like a bottom-out failure. It may be just a slow erosion where like the second generation's not as good as the first and the third's not as good as the second.
Because the thing is I don't think it's going to be just a pure failure. Like I think they might hit some missteps and then we get back down to 2 movies a year to maybe 1 movie a year until things get picked up again. And we establish some more, and then sequels to those characters come. Because, I mean, there's still characters to go, but you're getting deep. Like, you're getting deep cuts. I think of the kind of known ones, I think Doctor Strange is near the bottom of that. Guardians is below the bottom of that. So, I mean, it's what characters do you have that are...
You're scanning your wall.
I am scanning
pop
my pop figures to see, like... Because, you know, the X-Men are out because they're owned by Elsewhere.
For right now. Deadpool's out.
I mean, I could see them, if Fox stops being an idiot, I could see Fantastic Four bringing life back to them. your Reed Richards steps in as Tony Stark. I could see that kind of bringing some life into it, but
I don't think the failures are going to start with Guardians 2, but I am interested. We were very, I don't want to say skeptical, but cautiously, maybe optimistic about what the first Guardians was going to be like. What's your opinion of it now going into this one where we liked the first one so much? How is that like a different experience?
I'm more excited for it. Like, I did have hesitancies about the first one. I'm way excited for this. I mean, I'm not as excited as I am for Spider-Man, but that's Spider-Man. But I go in expecting this to be a massive hit, and I trust Gunn enough. With the stuff with Ego, I think they're going to, seeing how emotional those first few minutes of Guardians were, I think we're going to see more of that in the second one. Because he does like to play with tone, and he has some freedom now, I think we're going to see a great action movie, but I think we're going to expand on the emotional part of it, and you're going to see more Gamora and Star-Lord, and you know, you're going to see more Drax adapting to this, having a family, and more Rocket, and Baby Groot, obviously. I don't see a way this isn't a fun time.
No, I don't either. If $330 million was the first one, I mean, I don't see any way this makes less than $350.
I think four.
I think you're probably right. I mean, even if the second one is worse than the first, it always makes more money.
Well, I mean, Iron Man 3 is, right. I mean, that's the key. That's the perfect example. Like, sequels generally should make more.
Yes, they do. I think it's kind of appropriate that we spent so much time this week talking about Marvel because it is anniversary time next week, which... Basically, this show started out right around when the Avengers
opening weekend, the week after opening weekend of Avengers was our first episode.
And seemingly every year there is a big Marvel release right around our anniversary. So we kind of end up talking a lot about Marvel in our anniversary episodes, or we used to. Now I think we've almost tried to do it all the week before and then not do it at all next week. But in case you haven't picked up the hint yet, next week is... Our fifth anniversary.
Show.
Yeah. Well, I guess it would be 2012 to 2017. I'm sure we've got a lot of stuff planned. I'm sure I don't know what it is.
We've talked about it, but I got to remember. Have, yeah. I think there's a text trail to where we can see what the ideas are.
Yeah, we have to remember what we talked about.
We have to remember what we agreed upon. But we'll be back next week with our fifth year anniversary. We're not really self-congratulatory people. Last year was rough because we kind of did look back and kind of look at stuff, which I felt was weird. So we'll figure something out where we'll make it clear that it's our fifth anniversary. But
not reference anything that happened before.
Yes, it's not going to be a clip show. So because that would be too much work for
Ryan. It is. I've done those
before. I'm not chipping
it. It sucks.
So we'll be back next week for our fifth anniversary special. And we'll see you at Guardians of the Galaxy 2. But until then...
Keep it up.